Welcome to the Business of Government Hour, a conversation about management with a government executive who is changing the way government does business. The Business of Government Hour is produced by the IBM Center for the Business of Government, which was created in 1998 to encourage discussion and research into new approaches to improving government effectiveness. You can find out more about the center by visiting us on the web at businessofgovernment.org. And now, the Business of Government Hour.
Welcome to the Business of Government Hour. I'm Michael Keegan, your host and managing editor of the Business of Government magazine. The nation stands on the verge of a new era in aviation. The national airspace system is one of the largest and safest in the world. It is also one of the busiest. In 2010, more than 700 million passengers flew on U.S. air carriers. With air traffic expected to increase by 50% in 2025, and flight delays already causing disruptions in service and loss of productivity at current capacity, a revamped system is needed to accommodate future growth. A system that will let passengers fly safely with fewer delays and less congestion, while reducing aviation's environmental impact. What is FAA's Next Generation Air Transportation System, or NextGen? How will NextGen improve the airspace system? What is FAA doing to continue to be a global leader in aviation? We will explore these questions and so much more with our very special guest, Randy Babbitt, Administrator of the Federal Aviation Administration. Welcome, Randy.
Good to be here.
Also joining our conversation from IBM is Kunal Saravanshi. Welcome, Kunal.
Glad to be here.
Randy, let's start off at the beginning. Could you briefly give us an overview of the FAA's mission, history, and its evolution?
Sure. Well, our mission has been unchanged from day one, really, Michael. It's safety. And, you know, that's our purpose in life, is to make certain that we have the safest air transportation system. Obviously, we want to maintain the capacity or expand it, but that's our mission. The history of the FAA goes back into the 20s, the Air Mail Act, followed by the Air Commerce Act. But in 1958, they created the Independent Federal Aviation Agency. And then in 1966, they created the Department of Transportation and made it one of the modes. The Federal Aviation Administration became one of the modes of the department, and that's where we are today.
So operationally, it's such a critical mission. I'd like to get a sense of the operational footprint of FAA. Mm-hmm. And what I mean by that is, could you tell us about the core lines of business that make up FAA? What's your overall budget, number of full-time employees, and the scale of operations in terms of daily air traffic activity?
Mm-hmm. It's a big operation. We have almost 49,000 employees around the nation and the world. We have four, you know, basic core functions. Clearly, you know, our aviation safety is one of them, but we also remember, we manage airports, we have air traffic control, and today we have commercial space. So NASA, as the shuttle shuts down, we have taken over that responsibility to regulate safe operations into commercial space, licensing launches and reentries.
What's the size of your budget?
Budget right now, our budget request from the president for 2012 will be a $18.7 billion budget.
And how many folks actually make the mission of FAA successful?
I like to think all of them do. It's a big operation. I mean, we divide ourselves, as I said, air traffic control. We have 15,000 air traffic controllers, very dedicated folks that handle about 100,000 operations a day.
Wow.
We transport about 2.5 million passengers a day in our airspace. The population, everybody in the United States travels twice in round numbers a year. So it's a big operation. We move a lot of airplanes, and each operation would entail hundreds of different communications. You talk to ground control, you talk to the tower, you talk to departure control, you talk to the centers en route while you navigate. So it's a very complex operation. And of course, we certify the airplanes. You know, we inspect them. We have a lot of levels of inspection that go on to ensure the safety of the system.
So I'd like to turn to your leadership role at FAA. What are the responsibilities and duties of the administrator for the Federal Aviation Administration? And could you give us a sense of what a day or a week in the life of the FAA administrator is?
Well, the one thing for certain, you'll never be bored as the FAA administrator. No, I imagine every person takes their leadership responsibilities somewhat different. We're all different individuals. But if you likened it to being the CEO, I think my job is to, number one, you know, fulfill the mission and make certain that we're getting, that every employee there, whether they're in the top leadership or the brand new hire, has an opportunity to leverage their knowledge and you know, have a sense of fulfillment. And if everybody, we're working very hard to improve the culture of the FAA employees, become more collaborative with them. We have some wonderfully bright people that work at the FAA. Where we need to find better ways to engage them and leverage all that knowledge. And I think we're succeeding, and I think it's showing.
Randy, regarding your responsibilities and duties, what do you reckon are your top three challenges that you face in your position, and how have you addressed those challenges?
Well, that's a very good question. We never take our eye off of safety. So safety is our utmost challenge. You know, we have clearly one of the challenges moving forward. We're seeing traffic grow again. We have to find ways to expand the capacity of this national air traffic system that we have. And in order to do that, we're going to have to implement a next-gen technology shift. We're going to shift from a radar-based, literally Eisenhower-era type of navigation system to the navigation system of tomorrow. The airplanes will be equipped for it. We need to have personnel that are qualified to operate in that system, along with the technology. And it's very, the satellite-based is quite a change for us. But it'll bring us wonderful benefits. People say, well, it's going to cost some money to make this shift. And I like to tell them it's going to cost us more money not to make the shift.
You know, on a personal note, would you describe your career path for our listeners? How did you begin your career, and what brought you to your current leadership position?
It's a long trek when you look back at it. I have either the benefit or the curse of having done just about everything in aviation. I started down in South Florida. I learned to fly at a pretty young age. I worked as a line boy, fueled airplanes. And when I got enough time, I got a commercial pilot's license and an instructor. And I instructed while I was in college to build time. I have carried parachuters up to build time. You know, it was good money when you're 18. You know, it was a fun thing to do. Later on, I pursued my career in commercial aviation. I was a pilot for Eastern Airlines for almost 25 years. Got into a representation or leadership role in the Pilot Association. Was 8 years there as the president of the Pilots Association. And then left to go into the private sector. My airline, Eastern Airlines, had gone out of business in that stretch of time. So I started an aviation consulting company. So and we focused more on air service development in that company, and it gave me but another facet of aviation. So each of those has really added. I mean, when I look back, it was a wonderful school of a practical application. It was my degree courses were varied over time.
So with that background, I want to get a sense of your from your perspective, what are the characteristics of an effective leader? And more interestingly, how has being a pilot informed your leadership style and management approach?
Well, I'm sure everybody would have their own opinions of what makes what attributes would be helpful to be a good leader. I think actually in piloting, if you stop and think about it, if you're a pilot of a commercial aircraft, you have a crew, and they have to be coordinated, very well coordinated. We have to exchange information properly, and if you step away from it, in my view, that's one of the attributes that any leader, whether you're heading up a division, whether you're the CEO, the COO, wherever you are in your corporation, if you're just a director of a department, it's all the same. You've got to engage the folks that work with you. I really want to use and leverage the talent that the people that are working with me have. And so in order to do that, you have to listen. You have to challenge them. They should challenge you. A lot of those attributes came from, flying airplanes, really. You also learn, too, that people are different. And I give this some credibility back to my instructing days, when you would try and instruct a student, and if I told you to do something a particular way and you didn't get it, it didn't mean that there was something wrong with you. More likely, it was something wrong in the way I was trying to explain it. So maybe I need to explain it differently to you and try another approach. And I found that has been very, very helpful in my career in negotiations and in working with other people, other companies, my own teams, just because, people say, well, geez, I don't see that. Well, it doesn't hurt to look introspectively and say, well, maybe I'm not explaining that well. Let me try this. Does it come at you better this way? And I think we could all benefit sometimes from making the assumption that maybe it's a little bit me every now and then. It's not always you.
Well, you have mentioned collaboration and the need for that, and you bring up the tools that will make you a better leader. Does the concept of leadership, has that changed in your mind because we are in an increasingly interconnected and networked world? Mm-hmm. Does the concept change because of that, do you think?
I think it has. I think we all have to be pretty aware, pretty cognizant of the fact that there's new technology and how we communicate. People have access to so much more information. And I'm becoming aware also that not only do they have access, but different ranges of people access different information. If I want to communicate with one of my grandchildren, I'm going to have to send a text message. but, you know, someone else, on the other hand, I've got an elderly aunt, and I'm going to have to call her on the telephone. She's not going to get any Twitter messages or any other things, you know. So different generations, and I think companies are becoming aware. We have different communication channels and messages. And I think we have to be careful to utilize them all, make sure that everybody is getting, you know, the message through vehicles and communications channels that they can accept.
What is aviation's next-gen strategy? We will ask Randy Babbitt, Administrator of the Federal Aviation Administration, to share with us when our conversation continues on the Business of Government Hour.